Good day everyone, and welcome to the Step Into the Metaverse podcast. My name is Mark van Rijmenam, and I'm also known as The Digital Speaker. I am a future tech strategist, and I think about how emerging technologies change organizations and society. This podcast is part of my new book called Step Into the Metaverse, How the Immersive Internet Will Unlock a Trillion Dollar Social Economy. The book is available as an ebook, hard copy, and audiobook. As part of this book, I did nearly 100 in-depth interviews with the stakeholders involved in creating the open metaverse. The investors, the developers, the artists, the collectors, etc. And I've turned a selection of these interviews into this podcast, as I think that these conversations are too valuable to leave them on my computer. In this interview, I interviewed David Francis. David is a creative technologies and strategy specialist in the complexities of working with augmented, assisted, and virtual reality, as well as IoT and AI. He's heavily involved in extending AR and VR into the industrial world, introducing various advanced wearable solutions that facilitate Industrial 4.0 and the Industrial Internet of Things, plus AI. He has conceived, produced, and launched AR and VR for many of the world's biggest brands for more than a decade. During the interview, we discussed the technical challenges of building the metaverse, how big the enterprise metaverse will be, and the various new jobs the metaverse will create. Enjoy the conversation.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for hopping on a call with me. I really appreciate that you spending the time with me to share your insights on the metaverse. So maybe you can you start with sharing what you do and how you are involved in this space?
So I stumbled upon augmented reality in 2010. I stumbled upon a company called Daqri back then. And Daqri were one of the pioneers of the modern age of augmented reality, of basically mobile augmented reality. With the iPhone 3GS and more so with the iPhone 4, suddenly we had the compute power to do things with computer vision and tracking and all that sort of stuff that was really starting to make the industry, you know, come of age. I helped them pull in some of their first big customers, both domestic in Australia with like Stockland and Optus, and also global with 20th Century Fox and Target. And they got funded 15 mil round A, around about 2013, ended up creating probably the first enterprise position in AR, VR, certainly in the region. I went to a big company called Blue Star, now known as IVE Group on the ASX, one of the largest print organizations. And they deal with every blue chip company in the country, doing at least all their print communications and below the line and all that sort of stuff. But it meant I got to sit in meeting rooms with, all these very senior marketers and really start to wash the idea of augmented reality on their own thinking. And just a circle back, Daqri ended, in the end, raised about 280 mil, tried to develop a big smart helmet that was 3.5 kilos, too heavy. The tech wasn't really there. They were probably a bit early and they went down about 2 years ago. But a lot of the ex-Daqri guys and girls are now in a lot of the major companies in the space. So, you know, it's always a big reunion when I see them at the Augmented World Expo. I worked in IVE Group and we really built out the first, you know, enterprise offering in the country. And then 2016 started Virtual Method, and we work all the way from brands, like dealing with brands and marketers and help telling brand narratives in mobile augmented reality and experiential AR and VR with wearables, all the way through to doing some training, learning, and development, and which is more of an operational function. And then we work for about 3 and a bit years now. We work very heavily in Industrial 4.0 as well, because we brought a wearable to market called RealWear, which has to date been the world's most successful wearable, head-mounted wearable device, having sold double the amount that HoloLens has ever sold. So 50,000, 60,000 devices, I think they've now sold into almost every Fortune 500 company. RealWear, HMT1.
Okay.
Yeah, RealWear, not Vaporware, RealWear. So we were one of the original team that really brought that product to market and really started to have the first conversations around operational wearables in the enterprise. Here we go. I think I've got, there's a real wear device here with a band on it. It's a monocular heads-up display, but it's basically running a Snapdragon. It's a high-end Android tablet, all voice-activated with noise cancellation, fully ruggedized and all that sort of thing. So it's been a fascinating way to see how wearables will be adopted or not inside so many different verticals that we work with. And we've worked with them all, from defense to manufacturing to food and beverage to mining, oil and gas, you name it. So on the one side, that's been really fascinating, understanding like what is the actual reality of wearables, apart from all the hype, apart from, wow, look at this new eyewear that's come out. How do you put it on the head of like an engineer or someone who's not, like, doesn't eat, sleep and breathe technology the way that our industry does, and get them to wear it and find utility in it. And on the other side, we've continued to develop content for big brands and then launch them at mass scale to consumers, you know, like big campaigns for Woolworths and all that sort of thing. So we're getting millions of people activating, you know, campaigns through mobile. So understanding what content works and what doesn't. And on the other side, we're understanding what wearables works and doesn't. And then, of course, all of this is fed into what will be, as people are calling, the metaverse or Web 3.0. Ultimately, in the industry, we see it as just like a bunch of, you know, at the moment, a bunch of game worlds that, you know, are kind of being, are very popular and so are being looked at and compared to the missing millions in, you know, Ready Player One and all that sort of stuff. So really all the tools of the metaverse is what we work with. We work with spatial anchors. We work with real world meshing. We work with all the problems that you're going to encounter around how people are actually going to access content, whether it is metaverse outernet or metaverse internet, all the infrastructure you need, matchmade servers, how are you going to stream high polygon scenes into crappy little devices and all that sort of stuff. So that's really where we come in. We have a probably arguably more experience than anyone else in the practicalities, like holistically across the whole spectrum, marketing to operations. I would suggest we have probably more practical experience than most other people of how this is actually going to manifest, like how the metaverse is beyond Fortnite and Roblox and that sort of thing. How is it actually going to come into our everyday utility?
So from that perspective, so what do you think are some of the main technical challenges that we face to build the metaverse?
So if you use, for example, at the moment, Fortnite Creator, and you build your own little island in Fortnite, in Party Royale, off Party Royale, or whatever. I mean, which is a very, very basic tool. It's certainly not for developers. It's for, you know, even kids basically to build like, you know, little templated islands type thing and try and make some money, getting the ticket clipped less than if they built one in Roblox. So you can only have, I think it's 8 people in your environment at any one time, multiplayer. And that's because of basically you're booting up one instance on one server and you're hosting those people in that cloud-based server. So really, I mean, if you're talking, you know, an Epic, for example, looks at like, they're really attached to high-end compute. That's why they're like, you know, Nanite's coming and it's going to be able to stream film level graphics and all that sort of thing. But you've got to have a high-end RTX 3000 series computer or a PlayStation 5 or, you know, the latest Xbox or whatever, you know, and that's really limiting. And then you look at Unity and they're more about, they come from that mobile background. They're like, how can we get great experiences into this form factor? And even going back to like an iPhone 8 or Samsung Galaxy S7 or whatever it is. So you've kind of got like a two schools of thought about, I mean, we're just trying to get the best quality experience into the lowest spec device. That's always been the major challenge because of the incredible cloud infrastructure that you need. If you go onto Unity's like web page, main site right now, they're starting to bring out and list all the tools that you'll need to build out your own multiplayer cloud hosted environment. But ultimately, it's difficult and it's really expensive. And as I said, even with Fortnite Creator, even Fortnite, you know, limit you how many players you can have in their main game. They don't mind. But if you want your own little thing, they certainly put a cap on it. So that's going to be a challenge. The other challenge is going to be, how do we effectively put a mesh on the world so that the real world can localize a device, whether that is a mobile device or a wearable. And by localize, I mean mostly computer vision, maybe a little bit of GPS, but mostly computer vision. How can we allow a device to call upon a massive database and recognize itself, its position in pitch and yaw and all that sort of thing, down to sub 1 centimeter, so that we can then augment an environment around it and calibrate it to that environment perfectly. So, and these challenges are being addressed by rising entities like Niantic, but then there are a lot of other companies that are really looking into it of, you know, how can we pinpoint where someone is? It's a big task to do, but ultimately it means that whoever wins the wearable race, whoever wins the localization race, is going to win all, basically. They're going to be the pathways into content, aka if you want the metaverse.
Yeah. Which one do you think is more important, AR or VR, and why for the metaverse?
So they're very different mediums. You know, I know everyone likes to put them all under this catch-all of XR and all that sort of stuff, but ultimately they are very, very different. I mean, arguably, AR is, and by the way, I still call it augmented reality because that's what Apple's calling it. That's what they've always called it. That's what Google back in Mountain View still calls it. And I like the definition of augmented to mean to make better. So making a better reality, I think, is pretty cool. Personally, I think that you are going to be able to, you know, at nighttime in your entertainment sort of life, be able to probably use VR a bit more. I mean, VR is just so accessible now, like with a Oculus Quest 2 or a Vive Focus 3, you're able to really have an incredible, fully immersive experience. So VR is the most accessible tool today. There is no consumer level augmented reality device, really. You could kind of say, you know, Nreal is being sold through Deutsche Telekom and a few players, but it's not really there. I think they are going to both have their own utility. I think Apple are staking everything, I think, on augmented reality. I think they believe that being completely 100% immersed in another world is going to have far less utility than being able to just get rid of all the electronics in your home and augment a screen there and a screen there, and then a live streaming like 3D volumetric environment of your favorite football team on the table. And because you've wirelessly via ultra wideband connected to this powerful GPU hub in your home, and then you go out in the street and you dial it down to 3 to 5% virtuality as you're sort of walking along. And then when you get to work again, it like tethers to a hub, and then you boom, you've got, you know, future of work type stuff and agile workplace. And so, I mean, neither is better at all. I would just say that VR is so much more accessible today and so much easier to build for today is all I would say. It's a much easier way into this whole world of creating content using the tools of the metaverse. AR is very hard. I personally take credit for a few people who run companies around Australia who I know off the back of conversations with me when they knew nothing about AR ended up getting into it because I really sold it well. And then they got into it and some are no longer in it because they realize that, because I get very excited about it, I speak very positively about it, but I certainly don't tell people how also freaking hard it is. And people get into it and go,
because wow. You have to deal with the reality, obviously. So you have to have to, yeah, how do you play something that's digital in on the real world, which is constantly changing? And I think that's mm-hmm. the difficult part.
Not only constantly changing, but how do you allow them to cache it into their device, make sure they have the connectivity to do that, make sure that the experience is interesting enough for, at least right now, for them to hold up their phone and, you know, and move it around. And, you know, when before we have this great form factor of eyewear. Wait, let me get something. Oh, here we go. This is an oldie bit of goodie. The older, which is basically, this is the predecessor to what is now the A3 Think Reality from Lenovo. The old ODG R6s from back in, you know, back in 2000, when did I get these? 2014. They were $5,000 yeah. USD. I won them at the Augmented World Expo. But until we have that sort of form factor, in fact, much lighter than that even, which Apple's eyewear is probably going to be, still a little bit heavier than my, you know, Meta or Ray-Ban Stories type thing. But until we have that, what is going to cause people to hold a phone to want to like point at the ground and scan and localize and have an experience build up and then go from there? So yeah, it's challenging. It's also, it's deep creative technology. It's what I call, you know, because I trained as an actor back in the day, and we used to talk about this in terms of, I trained at the Victorian College of the Arts at the drama school. We used to talk about, you know, like a script like Chekhov's Three Sisters, you know, a script is limiting, you know, I mean, you can't just go off script as an actor. It's a form, but it's about finding freedom within form. So you need to speak that line, but how do you bring that line to life? Same with the world of augmented reality content is you have limitations, right? You know, I'm talking to a big theme park at the moment. They're like, I'm even saying, so if we activate and localize off this sign, don't put the sign at a 45, put it at about like a 70, because otherwise the sunshine overhead is going to shine off it and straight into the camera. People won't be able to see it if it's on a 45. Once you understand all those things, and mind you, many of them are learned the hard way, once you understand them, then you can find the freedom within that form. But you do need very strong knowledge, and a lot isn't written in books of those limitations. So then you can find the limitlessness of creativity that once you understand that form factor. And then as you know, we move to eyewear and everything, suddenly some of those limitations are lifted, such as Google. I tried Magic Leap 2, for example, last week, and it's got like perceptually like a 70 degree field of view, but the field of view is in the vertical, like it's in portrait. So it goes all the way down to the ground on like a 45 and about a meter in front of you. And that means from a content perspective, as opposed to like a HoloLens 2, you know, as opposed to HoloLens 2, where you've got like a FOV that's sort of smaller and in landscape, content-wise, you go, wow, now I can build content that is more about being floor anchored because I've got a field of view that goes all the way to the floor. Whereas with this device, it's more about things floating in the air because you can't really get the max utility out of vertical floor anchoring, if that makes sense.
It definitely does. And I think, you know, as long as we work with phones, you know, and I don't like looking through my phone at AR, you know, it's annoying. So unless I think we
reach the state where... Depends.
Yeah, but it's
if
still
the content's
a little
good,
screen
that you... Nothing's annoying.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what I mean? Like, if something's good, if you want to see it, if it's like your favorite pop star, you know, that you are a massive fan of, and she's going to appear in front of you as a volumetric stream with like an exclusive song and everything, you don't give a crap about holding up your phone. You're like, oh my God, you know, whoever is, you know, my favorite is in my home and oh my God, that's amazing. So it depends. But in terms of just, you know, seeing a task that you need to do in full 3D because you're an engineer working on a big piece of equipment, yeah, it's like, I don't want to hold my freaking phone. In fact, I can't hold my phone up because I've got to hold open this door and I've got to use this tool and I've got to hold on to this, like, you know, support here because I'm 15 feet in the air hanging off this big piece of mining equipment. How are you going to hold up your phone?
No,
you know?
You can't. So from that perspective, can you share your ideas and your thoughts on the enterprise metaverse, you know, digital twins?
Yeah.
How big is this going to be?
It will be absolutely enormous in terms of like every single industry. I see this because we work across all these industries with, you know, the monocular displays like RealWear right now. And they're not prepared. I mean, they all want to go to full holograms everywhere, but they don't understand, you know, the cost and the you know, what's going to be required to do that and how much utility it's going to have before we have really amazing sort of eyewear. But I mean, certainly every single major company, especially, will need to be able to create their own content. It will be enormously disruptive. It will be a major disruptor for their competitiveness. If you look at like some of the stats that we get out of this industry, just from monocular, like assisted reality display, we're talking averages of 35% increases in productivity, you know, because, for example, people are taking readings, like engineers are taking readings of something and they're transposing it into a digital format in under 3 seconds. So they're using their working memory with zero cognitive load. And it also means that the actual, what they're putting down is generally 100% accurate. Beyond 3 seconds, it becomes a neural synapse and they've got to try and, even if they pick up a tablet or something, 3 seconds is over. It's now like got to become a memory. And so by the end of the day, they feel like they've just sat their HSC again, you know. So even just in 35% productivity, it's huge. More than 80% reduction in time to mutual understanding of just being able to share someone's POV and see what they're doing and have like an empathic, like quasi-biomechanical response to the task that they're doing. I mean, bring, you know, so-called holograms or 3D content and everything into that, and you're talking 35% just up, you know. And if you're looking at companies competing against each other on X amount of margins and all that sort of thing, and also competing for, you know, as we see, it's hard to find people to employ. I know in the industrial world, companies that have so many positions available, you know, especially in regional areas, they can't find people to employ to come into these roles. And it's also going to be about like employing the next these kids, these Gen Ys and Gen Alphas and everything, Gen Zs and Gen Alphas that are going to come out of school and go, well, I want to work with a company that is actually going, looks like it understands the future and is going to give me a career, you know. So for the enterprise, it is critical. And I certainly think there are some companies, I mean, in aerospace, they're very advanced around, I mean, the term augmented reality comes from a Boeing engineer anyway, some years ago, but they're very advanced around using this technology and increasingly in automotive manufacturing. But there's a lot of industries that are still quite far behind. And the thing is, there's a real push towards AI and full automation, right? It's like, let's bring in the bots. Bring in the bots, bring in the AI, the chat bots, and bring in the physical bots. But a lot of people, you know, they get like some Azure Cognitive Services or IBM Watson thing off the shelf. And they go, wow, can recognize man versus woman and child versus adult. And they don't realize, but if you want to train an AI for your business, the amount you need 5,000 to 10,000 images of the thing you want it to do and the thing you don't want it to do. And then you've got to start 3 months of churning in like an heterogeneous compute hub. And you might have something that is useful at the back end. You know, yeah. They don't realize what is involved. And also so much automation, especially around a lot of tasks in many, you know, in field service and all that sort of thing is not, I mean, we're talking years and years and years from now, but there is this massive stopgap, for use of a better term, of just augmenting the human beings you've got, of just empowering and upskilling and making information available and making it instantly learnable because it's kinesthetic, it's in front of them, you know, it's they're orally and visually and kinetically engaged. That is the huge stopgap. And so you're seeing Toyota, you know, with measuring 15 times the efficacy of using virtual reality for training versus traditional training methods. And their traditional training methods weren't crap. They were considered probably pretty good, you know, in terms of that traditional like PowerPoint format or whatever they used. So yeah, I think a lot of the enterprise doesn't realize what a huge impact this technology is going to have upon them. And also even brands that are consumer facing are thinking about the metaverse. I mean, a lot of fashion has jumped in with Balenciaga and Gucci and all that sort of thing into collaborations with Roblox and Fortnite, et cetera. It's not necessarily practical unless you have a brand like Nike or, you know, Balenciaga that everyone knows. You know, you've got companies going, oh, can we jump in and just, you know, do what Balenciaga's doing? And I'm like, yeah, but you're like, you know, you're a company that manufactures something. And yeah, nobody knows you. Like, are supermodels wearing your stuff? No. So, but it's going to be extremely important to a point of survival for many, many companies in the enterprise.
Yeah, that makes total sense. What kind of new jobs will we see in the metaverse in the next decade or so? What do you expect?
Right now, this is what I learned at the Augmented World Expo last week. I think there's a, from what I heard from some XR recruiters there, is there's about 25,000 jobs currently available at an average salary of $200,000 USD.
Wow.
Yeah, today, that need to be filled today. So this industry is absolutely taking off like no one's business right now. Meta threw down, and Meta are like, I've got mates in competitors to Meta, and they're getting calls from headhunters every second day. The money for people who understand anything about AR, like and from lead engineers, especially computer vision people, they're in very high demand. Game engine developers, 3D content artists, and also people like myself who, you know, I've obviously got my own company, but people like myself who just understand how everything kind of goes together and all the tools that are out there, and also understands how to translate all this into the enterprise and into brands. There is a massively increasing demand, and you know, PwC are saying it's going to be a $1.5 trillion industry by 2030. But then John Hankey, who's the founder of Keyhole.com and is now the founder of Google Earth and now the founder of Niantic, reckons it'll be trillions. There is a reason why one of the world's largest tech companies, being Facebook Meta, just literally pivoted across to being completely focused on this space at an $88 billion market cap. They're now focused on all of this technology in the metaverse, AR, VR. And although they're not saying it, so is Apple. So is the world's biggest company. They are razor focused on this space. And, you know, if it's Apple, it's got to be, they're not interested in a few billion. For them, this is the great, this is, as I say, this is the 80s all over again. This is Jobs and Gates and, you know, IBM and, you know, but bigger, because whoever gets to own that interface in front of your eyes, whoever gets to own that ecosystem, will it be altruistic and Web 3.0 and like the original internet and everyone's like academics just sharing their nodes? And I doubt it, you know, not for a long time. It will be, come to my ecosystem, says Meta, come to my ecosystem, says Apple. And I mean, look at what's happening between Epic and Apple in courts right now. Like, everyone hates on Epic right now. You know, everyone's hating Epic. Google's hating Epic, and they're like these pariahs. But I mean, yeah, it is whoever owns that, get rid of this. Get rid of this computer screen. Get rid of that display over there. Get rid of, I always say, if you go forward in time 10 years, it'll be like you've gone back 50, because you'll go, where's all the digital? Where's all the screens? Where's all the electronics?
They're not necessary much. So don't invest in Dell computers or HP computers.
No, and why is everyone wearing eyewear? Has everyone suddenly lost their eyesight? And what are those little flickering elements in their eyewear?
Yeah, Anyway,
one video I highly recommend you watch is by a guy called Greg Tran. It was his Harvard graduating project called Mediating Mediums.
Okay.
So have a look at that video. And I also recommend watching anything in terms of dystopian, probably already aware, but Keiichi Matsuda, K-E-I-C-H-I, is there a second I maybe? And then M-A-T-S-U-D-A. Anything by Keiichi Matsuda and also by Greg Tran, Mediating Mediums. It's a really beautiful thought, thinking about public and private space in effectively a metaverse alternate world.
Yeah, well, I will definitely look them up. Thank you so much for that.
In terms of a topic to cover, I mean, personally, I think the concept of volumetric versus avatar, I mean, avatars are a really fascinating area of allowing people to stand behind something that hides their, maybe the layer, they're physical, they're not happy with their physical appearance, or maybe they're not comfortable with their sexuality or whatever. But avatars will, I predict, and already allow people to basically be them true selves, potentially in a metaverse, and reveal a lot more talent and everything. The other thing that I would think about is, and this is a bigger thing, and actually Carly, my co-founder, really brought this up with me, and we've been talking about it a lot, is what the metaverse represents is a redistribution of wealth. It represents a massive economic upheaval in the world today that cuts out all the middle people and connects the buyers with the creators directly. And I think that is a really, really powerful area to look into as well, as the economics of suddenly taking out all of the middle people, and also the limited choice we have when we go to the dog food section or we go to the tinned tuna section or whatever at the supermarket. We go, wow, there's so much choice. Well, those choices were decided for us by someone. So it represents true and unlimited choice and directions where you can, you know, engage with the world at large. No more borders. I mean, kids are already doing it on Instagram and TikTok and everything. Australian kids are developing American accents. There's a true universality of experience. It's really interesting. The cultural differences between all our regions, like between the guys, oh, the Americans would do that, the Australians wouldn't. Well, the next generation, they're all going to be
don't care anymore, one mind.
Yeah,
I agree. Countries at some point will disappear eventually. I think the question is when. That's a different story. Exactly. I really appreciated your time and your insights. So thank you so much for that.
And that wraps up the conversation with David Francis. If there's one thing that stands out for me from the conversation, it is how important the metaverse will be for the enterprise. The metaverse and the digital twins will change how we work, which is why in my new book, Step Into the Metaverse, I discuss the enterprise metaverse and why I think the digital twins are the tier one of the metaverse. If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to hit the like and subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform so you will be notified when any of the other interviews will become available. Thank you, and see you in the metaverse.